Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFon Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And Sansum Clinic, whose multi-specialty team of medical professionals have been providing quality care to you and your family for 98 years. And we're here today with our Congressman, Salud Caperholt. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So is there anything going on we could talk about?
Just a few things. You know, Washington has been a little uneventful lately. that's a joke.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot to talk about. I think there's obviously the whole impeachment inquiry issue is at the forefront. And two, in addition to that, I like to think that in the House of Representatives, there's a lot that we are doing in moving forward legislation to address the many challenges that the American people face, whether it's for gun safety, to address climate change, education, raise the minimum wage, doing the things that I think the American people want the House of Representatives to be working on.
And isn't isn't that a fear, though, that the impeachment process will push away that effort, and so it becomes the party of no rather than a party of a policy change that is really important?
Well, I think that becomes an issue for the House to make sure we get the word out of all the things that we are doing. I think Democrats could walk and chew gum at the same time, and we could do our oversight and the investigations, the inquiry, impeachment inquiry that needs to take place in light of the, again, evidence that has come forward, and yet at the same time do all the things we need to be doing. I'll remind you, the House of Representatives to date has moved 10 out of the 12 appropriations bills. Appropriations bills means the budget. And the Senate has moved on none. So we're hoping that the Senate, Mitch McConnell, decides that he will wake up one day and say, hey, there's some work to be done. And they actually work on the issues that the House has been doing. So that is the fear. But I think that as long as we keep working on both fronts, one, the impeachment inquiry, and the other one, all the issues that the American people want us to work on to lower prescription drug and health care costs, to address gun violence, to address climate change, to improve our education system, and to ensure that we are creating a healthier economy by creating more jobs. That's what we will be doing.
But, you know, with the three shootings that took place in a very short period of time, there was some optimism that there'd be at least red flag laws that would be passed. And the impeachment noise really has sort of pushed that on the back burner. Is there any hope that whatever momentum they had after those shootings will result in some legislation?
Well, I sure hope so. I think the American people are demanding that we take action. A reminder, the House of Representatives has passed H.R. 8, Universal Background Checks. Just a few weeks ago, the Judiciary Committee moved my bill, the Extreme Risk Protection Order Act bill, which would allow family members and law enforcement officials to work with the courts to take guns away temporarily away from individuals who pose a danger to themselves or others through a restraining order issued by the courts. In addition, we passed a number of other gun safety bills, and I think we just need to continue doing what we're doing and make sure the American people continue to put pressure on the Senate to do their job. The House is doing it. We're just hoping the Senate continues and wakes up and decides that they, too, want to work for the American people.
You know, one of the things that gun advocates always talk about is that guns make you safer. And yesterday, the New York Police Department, probably the best police department in the country, discovered that the police officer who was shot 2 days ago was shot by friendly fire. And, you know, to me, the idea that you could arm teachers and arm yourself in order to protect your family and the public just doesn't pass muster when New York City policemen accurately fire 33% of the time, and they're the most well-trained. It's just so, it just boggles the mind that that rhetoric really seems to work for some people.
Yes, well, what we need to do is re-enact the assault weapons ban that expired in 2004.
It worked.
Yes, and that's a bill that, again, has been put forth, and I'm hoping makes it over the finish line as well. We need to move forward sensible gun laws. But what's more important here, Neil, is that 80 to 90% of the American people feel that this is reasonable. It's just that the NRA has a grip on this president and the Republican Party. We need to make sure that they understand that the American people overwhelmingly want us to move these type of sensible gun laws forward.
So I don't know about you, but I could tell you that if I were a 16-year-old like Greta Thunberg, and I was sitting in front of the U.S. Congress and a 50-year-old male with gray hair and a business suit started to question me and asked, well, you have some interesting ideas, but what do you think is the benefit of us working on climate change when the Chinese are the biggest polluters? And she looked him right in the eye and said, that's what we say about America in Sweden. And, you know, it's sort of, first of all, I can't believe she said that. She's able to think about that in her feet. But the second thing is, one of the things about doing something, whether it's gun control or climate, is that you have to step up first. You just can't point the fingers. And this is another Republican talking point. We can't address climate change because the other guy's not addressing it.
Absolutely. And we need to take action. Greta, I think, and her alliance with all the other youth in on this earth are doing extraordinarily good work by raising awareness that we need to take action now. And again, in the House of Representatives, we recently passed the Coastal Marine Economies Protection Act, which included my bill that I sponsored, first bill I ever that I sponsored when I went to Congress and re-initiated it this Congress, is the California Clean Coast Act, which would preclude oil and gas drilling off our coasts throughout the entire nation. The California Clean Coast Act would be California alone. That got folded into this broader bill. So we are taking action to address climate change. But again, the Senate is not taking up any of these issues.
And if they did, that would never get signed by our current president.
Yes, so it's really that is the sad part of this.
Well, speaking of our current president, the thing that I found, and I find so many things not really comprehensible, but he says that the California should not have the right for its own pollution rules, and then 2 weeks later sues us for polluting the air. I can't even put my head around that.
No, this president has shown a disdain for protecting the environment, but more importantly,
for logic,
he's demonstrated retribution towards California for being in the avant-garde of addressing climate change, of wanting to have higher standards to reduce our emissions and to create a cleaner, safer environment and for families and individuals.
And, you know, the whole idea that people don't believe that climate change is a settled issue, without mentioning names, do you ever speak to the other side of the aisle privately? And do they really believe that climate change is not real?
Well, I will tell you, there is a cadre of individuals who are from the other side and who are part of the Climate Solutions Caucus, who do believe that climate change is real and that we can work together to find common ground to move forward. For example, there's been a number of carbon fee and dividend programs to put a price on carbon and to start addressing that very important issue on a national level. There is a number of bills that I've sponsored in a bipartisan fashion that also address climate change, with Representative Rooney, for example. I recently put forth legislation that would address climate change. It's called the Coastal State Climate Preparedness Act. And this legislation would amend the Coastal Zone Management Act to require the Secretary of Commerce to establish a coastal state climate change adaptation planning and response grant program. There's a lot that can be done. It's really sad that this president and the majority of the Republicans in Congress, not all, continue to have this anti-climate change attitude and deny that we need to take action to address this very important issue.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Congressman Salud Carbajal. And I remember when you first went to Congress, you were saying that you wanted to be someone that could work on both sides of the aisle. You still have any optimism about that?
Absolutely. I am part of the Problem Solvers Caucus, which is a group of
three people.
48 individuals, half Democrats, half Republicans, that are committed to trying to find common ground. And we have on immigration, on health care, on infrastructure. We continue to find areas where we could at least establish a foundation so that both parties could work from. So there's still individuals that are committed to finding common ground. I'm still committed. I'm an optimist. You know, we need to work through ideological issues and really find ways to work with one another so that we could move forward solutions and get results for the American people. This gridlock that we have come to know about Washington is something that we should never tolerate, and we should always strive for finding that common ground to get things done.
So what I love about you is that you seem to be happy. You are energized. You're excited about it. I can't watch CNN anymore. I'm only on Netflix and Amazon. I can't watch the news because it drives me nuts. So you are in the battlefield, and you seem actually able to engage every day. You know, how do you do it?
Well, I stay optimistic. One is I try to achieve a good work-family-life balance. This job is very demanding. I travel back and forth every week from Santa Barbara to Washington.
Yeah, but big deal. You got all those frequent flyer miles.
The glorious life of the frequent flyer miles, let me tell you. But I try to achieve that balance. It's not always easy, but it keeps me very busy. But at the end, I take my responsibility very serious in terms of my constitutional responsibility. And that's why I think that we can and should have oversight, as Congress has that responsibility of the executive branch. And when you see the law being broken, such as what we're seeing now, that we move forward with our oversight responsibility, and in this case, the impeachment inquiry. But I also believe that we should not lose sight of all the important work that we need to do day in and day out on all those issues that continue to challenge our country, on health care, on climate change, on immigration, creating jobs, gun safety laws. We need to continue to do both. And I try to One, I think it's the optimism in me that keeps me going in hope that there will be a better day tomorrow. And you just got to stay positive.
Well, you mentioned immigration and, you know, AHA and its various programs have a great deal to do with teens, a lot of whom are from immigrant families. And one of the real stressors, as you know, are these kids fearful that when they come home from school, they won't have parents sitting here? And, you know, it seems that, you know, DACA, I know it's going right now to a higher court, but it seems to be put on the back burner. You know, what's plan B? You know, we have all these kids and people. Do we have a solution if things don't work out with the courts?
Well, you know, we have a divided government. And despite that, I continue to believe that the bill that the House that I voted on, that passed a few weeks ago, the American Dream and Promise Act, is something that the Senate can take up as well and could wind up on the president's desk. This president, when he did away with the president's executive order with the DACA program, said, bring me a bipartisan bill. Well, we have a bipartisan bill The fact of the matter is that the Senate will not take it up, and this president now is playing politics with the lives of these young people. All we can do is continue to move that legislation forward and find opportunities to address our broken immigration system, be it for Dreamers or for in other areas, and move those solutions forward. But until the Senate changes their disposition, or the people of the United States change the composition of the Senate and this White House, I think we're going to continue to have this division on this very important issue.
So let's ask an inside the Beltway question. How available is leadership in the Congress to a second year, second term Congress? Do you have access to leadership?
Absolutely. That's probably one of the most positive things about the House. Anytime I want to have a discussion with Nancy Pelosi or Steny Hoyer or any of our leadership, Mr. Clyburn, I could come to their office, I could set up an appointment, and it's quick and it's done. Before I came on board on Medicare for All, I had a good discussion with Nancy and to get a sense of where the lay of the land was and discuss the substance of that issue. And I wanted to have a discussion with her and saw her immediately. And it's, again, she's very accessible. And we have ongoing conversations every week on all the different important issues that we're considering.
So one of the things that scares people is in the presidential race, there is rhetoric that is very, very left. And I think of myself as a liberal. You're a liberal. But some of the stuff coming out is scaring some people. And Elizabeth Warren is now, either first or second in some of the polls. Is it possible that we're going to slide too far left for the middle ground, for the independents?
I think that's what tends to happen with every primary, be it the Republicans or the Democrats. I think you have people who want to lean more towards the base. And in this case, part of the base it wants us to address those important issues. So I understand this desire to come out to see who can out-Democrat one another. But at the end of the day, as you recall in previous elections, there's always a recalibration of where the American people are at and where the Democratic Party is at, and come up with solutions that are pragmatic, that can be moved forward. And I think we will find that center ground again.
I think you're right. What scares me, though, is the voice bites that the Republicans will use during the presidential campaign of people saying things like we're going to have a huge wealth tax on people, which will scare them. But it is what it is. So there was an article last week by Ross Duhart in the New York Times that coming from a Republican commentator, I thought was very interesting. He said that one of the real problems with this administration, which has been true going back to Rome days, and he goes through a whole history of how Rome fell, but that the dishonesty is manifest. And, do you think that the Senate's intransigence is based on ideology or is it greed? I don't understand it. What don't they have any sense of legacy?
Well, we would always hope that at the end of the day, that in Congress we could put politics aside for the sake of our country being first and our national security. That seems to have fallen to the wayside with the Senate, clearly, and the leadership, Mr. McConnell. What we're seeing now is something that should transcend politics. No matter whether we have a president that's a Democrat or a Republican, and in this case, a Republican president, Mr. Trump, who has clearly abused his power. He has betrayed the American people. And we are now talking about the rule of law and the Constitution. And Republicans and Democrats have a responsibility to protect the interests of our country and our national security, first and foremost, above party. And I think this last ordeal that we have seen, this president pressuring a foreign government of Ukraine to meddle in our elections, to favor his election, and then withholding military aid for that country, I think is not only smoke, it's the smoking gun again that demonstrates that this president does not abide by the rule of law. And Republicans or Democrats, we need to unite to make sure that this impeachment inquiry moves forward, to get to the bottom of it so the American people could see this once and for all.
So do you think that what he did with Ukraine is as bad as a picture I saw of his Make America Great? This is a true picture of his Make America Great red hat, and inside of it it said Made in China, which is the irony
Well, keep in mind, much of his business products, his ties and other things, were always made in China. So, you know, this is he really the patriot that he claims he is? I would say words, hollow words, are not the same as being the patriot.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Congressman Salud Carbajal. And I just read AHA, improving and creating social harmony. You know, one of the things that society should be focusing on is having social harmony. And last week, the president said that if he doesn't succeed, we're going to have a civil war, which is really beyond
treasonous in itself, promoting destruction of our country. I don't know what else is.
Yeah. So what's going on with veterans and military families? When you first said you were going to run for Congress, I remember your first ad had you in uniform. You look much younger then, by the way.
I was a lot. Those were very old pictures.
Okay. So I take it that's still an interest. You're on the Veterans Committee.
I serve on the House Armed Services Committee to ensure that our men and women and their families, both domestically and internationally, have all the resources they need to carry out their mission. And making sure that we have all the necessary support so that they could be effective. I don't sit on the Veterans Committee, but there is a nexus and an overlap between the Veterans Committee and the House Armed Services Committee. And I have moved forward bills and supported bills that would address some of the big challenges that our veterans are facing when they get back from their service, be it wartime service or otherwise, be it housing. I sponsored legislation to broaden housing opportunities for veterans. I have, through the appropriations process, moved forward language and appropriations that would help the VA system have more resources to address the backlog of appointments and the phone system so that veterans could get directly towards a live person to make their appointments. And also, transportation. Transportation tends to be a challenge for veterans to go beyond the clinics in our region to the main hospital in Los Angeles, for example. And there's an appropriation that I move forward that would help provide more resources to augment that bus transportation system to help veterans get to their medical services.
So I take it you didn't support removing military funds like building schools on military bases for the funding of the wall.
Absolutely.
I mean, think about that one for a minute.
Well, this president created or fabricated, should I say, an emergency. And then he took over $6 billion from Department of Defense national security funding that was going to go towards our men and women who are serving to support their services, their housing, to support schools, all of those things that are important to them. He took that money directly away from them.
So we have a diverse, you have a diverse district. It's north, south, and north is more ag than the south. And we have this China-America tariff war going on. I imagine it's hurting all farmers. I imagine it must be hurting some of the ag people up north. Has that moved any of them to a more, I was going to say enlightened, but I'm on the radio, but a more democratic political view?
Well, first of all, let me share with you that I sit on the Agricultural committee. And as such, that also falls in line with the priorities of the district. The number one industry in the district is agriculture. And certainly what I have heard from the ag interests in my district and throughout the country is that they are very concerned about the tariffs that this president, the tariff war that this president has embarked on, and the pain that it's causing to many agricultural farms. And here in California, we certainly are seeing that, be it regarding berries, table grapes, wine, the wine industry. We are seeing a lot of pain that has resulted from that. Are they concerned? Absolutely. Are they more sympathetic towards the Democratic position? I'd say it's a mixed bag. But overwhelmingly, I think they are going through some pain, and they have been expressing their concerns to me. And I continue to be vigilant, and you know, we're going to be considering the USMCA NAFTA 2.0 in the future. And if we're able to work out the challenges that exist with that trade agreement right now with 2.0, the pharmaceutical compact, labor and environmental standards, and the enforceability of those chapters, I think we're going to be able to move that USMCA forward, and it's going to benefit our farmers who have a lot of business with Canada and Mexico.
So what happened to all of the infrastructure talk? The day that Trump got elected, there was this hope that the one area where both the Democrats and Republicans could agree was the infrastructure need, and it would be stimulative, and it would be something that is 100 years overdue. It's like nowhere.
Well, Neil, you're touching on yet another promise this president made that never came through, and we can't let him forget that. He promised Mexico would pay for the wall. That didn't come to be. He promised that this would be the case, and indeed, it's not. So we need to just keep that in mind.
Well, hopefully there's a way to resurrect that. And, you know, with your group of 24, one of the things that is such an easy solution to all of our problems in terms of, like, the fact that manufacturing is slowing is to stimulate not just lower interest rates, which will just create a higher stock market, but to spend money with low interest rates to rebuild our infrastructure.
Absolutely. Well, let me tell you, it's been really disappointing that we haven't been able to move this $2 trillion infrastructure proposal that the president committed to early on, because that would have infused our economy, modernized our infrastructure, created jobs, and it would have been great. And to date, he's backed off. And I'm still hopeful that we can move forward with some infrastructure investments in the future, perhaps with the Highway Trust Fund and the reauthorization of the Surface Transportation Act in the near future.
So at least we got health care figured out.
Somewhat, but still a lot of work to be done to lower prescription drug costs, to create a public option, to move us in the direction of Medicare for America and Medicare for All, to kind of come up with a solution that keeps adding and giving us better and more health care, not taking it away, as my colleagues, my Republican colleagues, have been wanting to do. When they talk about health care, it's never to enhance it. It's always to take away. When Democrats talk about health care, it's giving more and more to the extent that we can.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's so interesting is people use the word giving, and that's one of the Republican things that they reject. It's like giving health care. It's like it's not a right. It's something that you're giving as a gift. It's an entitlement, which is, you know, sort of emblematic of what I think people should reject, the whole idea that human beings are have to earn their health care. And I think one of the things that I think make me more optimistic is that last week, the number of the percentage of health care costs that someone working for a big corporation has to pay is going to go up 20%. And one of the things that I think caused people to resist the Democratic view of health care is that they work for big companies. They have health care paid for, they believed, by their company. Why would they want to mess with it? Well, as health care becomes more expensive for people working for corporations, you may see more people realize that this is something that affects them as well.
Absolutely. And again, I will remind you, the House of Representatives have moved forward a number of bills that will address prescription drug costs and are doing everything to lower healthcare costs. but the Senate will not take them up. The Senate led by Mitch McConnell, and this president obviously has talked a big game, but we have not seen any action other than the corruption and the things that this president has done that have broken the rule of law by trying to move forward and pressuring the president of Ukraine to meddle in our elections. And that's why we have this impeachment inquiry moving forward.
So I'm just listening to myself, and I'm wondering whether I sound like someone doing an interview or someone running for office. So I think I better take a break. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. So do you think there'll be coalescing behind one candidate? Is there going to be sniping that will go on past the primaries? Do you think we'll have a united Democratic Party going into the election? People realize it's just too important to sit it out.
Well, I think what I've heard is that the American people overwhelmingly want to galvanize behind a person that can beat Mr. Trump. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that galvanizing in the months to come. Certainly, we're all hopeful that we will galvanize and come around to supporting one individual. And I think we're on our way there.
So why do people always say, people who are experts, that Republicans vote are more likely to vote than Democrats? You know, there's more Democrats in this country than Republicans, but they don't vote as much, so everyone says. How important is it to get out the vote, but also why are Democrats not voting in the same percent as Republicans?
Well, first of all, we need to invest and do as much as possible in getting out the vote. And that's why I think you're seeing in the presidential debates discussion of a number of issues that I think the American people and Democrats are very concerned about: healthcare, climate change, gun safety laws, bettering our education system, creating a more equitable economic prosperity for everyone, not just the few, the top 1%. So it's important that we have that. But at the end of the day, I think we need to do everything possible to make sure that we're resonating with the American people, and Democrats have a reason to come out and vote. I think in the past that you've seen Democrats feeling that we're not doing enough to address the important issues that they care about. Not to mention, I think that Democrats have more of a working class foundation in terms of their ranks. And I think many of those individuals have some challenges when it comes to just getting food on the table. Believe it or not, sometimes voting, as important as it is, for some reason, they don't get around to it because they have two jobs or something. But they need to understand how important it is to get to the polls.
Yeah, but I heard a statistic that in 2016, Hispanic turnout was less than in 2012. And I find that, given the rhetoric of the campaign in 2016, for Hispanics not to come out to vote was just astounding to me.
Yes. No, that's a never-ending challenge that I think we all hope to address in the future. It doesn't help when this administration has, continued to instill fear in the Hispanic community, even though the individuals that would be voting clearly would be U.S. citizens. But again, I think it trickles down to just this level of fear that exists with the entire Hispanic community.
I find it so humorous when people on the Republican side say we're afraid someone who's an illegal immigrant is going to try and vote. That's exactly what they're going to try and do. They're so interested in voting, they're going to risk their citizen, their stay here to vote. I mean, it's completely nuts.
Well, don't forget that there's been many efforts in the past couple of years to undermine people's ability to turn out and vote. Again, some states continue to work on manufacturing the ID proposals to require people to put forth their ID so they could vote, and all kinds of other things that are basically barriers to people voting.
So what's really important in any free society, any democracy, is education. And we need to make sure that people in this country are educated. And it seems that And other than like California, where money is now being increased, we don't see the kind of you know, national emergency to try to get everyone the education they deserve. What has to be done to make education much more effective, particularly with those that don't have a support system, who aren't from a parent that is college educated? How do you change the system so it's not only just access, but it's the opportunity to really succeed at school?
Well, I think we need to look at the education system and make sure that we are providing more financial aid so that more people can have access to a higher education. I co-signed legislation that would make community college tuition free. And I think that's a good step in getting as many people into the pipeline so that they could continue their education towards a higher education degree. I will be initiating this week the Degrees Not Debt Act, which would basically double the Pell Grant Award. It would hold colleges accountable for the success of their students. In other words, making them accountable for providing all the support network and all that's needed to really help students that are struggling, who are getting financial aid, to be able to get to the finish line and get their degrees and education. But first, I think we need to provide more financial aid, as my Degrees Not Student Debt Act would do. And then we need to make sure that we're pressing education institutions to do more to help those that are in school to have the support that they need to gain the skills and to do the work that they need to do to get their degree.
Yeah, well, good luck with that with our current Secretary of Education, where they're not even coming down on for-profit schools that clearly are not doing the job. And it's very difficult now for someone who has debt with one of those schools to relieve themselves of it. And by the way, one of the really strange things about our bankruptcy code is tuition debt is not dischargeable in a bankruptcy. It's one of the very few things that's not. So yes. When someone gets stuck with student debt, they're stuck.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you're giving me a softball, an opportunity to talk about some of the things I'm doing. I've last Congress and this Congress, looking forward to moving the Banking on Students Act, which would allow for students who do have debt to refinance their student loans, like you could refinance a mortgage. That's something that's not really available right now. Also, we need to do much, much more, because we need to find an opportunity to provide for those individuals or students who want to pursue a career in public service to be able to write off their student debt by providing or working in a career that is a public service.
So there is an effort among Democrats to not only look at changing legislation, but of flipping the Senate, because no matter who's president, if the Senate is still controlled by a Republican like McConnell, nothing's going to get done. And it only requires three or four seats to flip the Senate. Do you think that spending time and effort to do that, such as people who are supporting McConnell's challenger, is productive use of time? Do you think?
Absolutely. I think the American people are frustrated, and the way they can deal with their frustration is to get engaged, get involved. In every which way of engagement, whether it's monetary, whether it's making phone calls, whether it's walking, whatever can be done. I think the American people, it's part of our democracy. They should be able to step up. They should be able to participate. And that does make a difference. It does make a difference. We saw that in the election of Congress, the 116th Congress, Democrats took the majority again. Why? Because the American people rose up. They were fed up with the direction our country was headed, what the previous Congress was doing. I will venture to say they're fed up with the Senate being led by Mr. McConnell, not taking action and considering any legislation, not doing their job. And I think the American people are going to speak loudly.
Well, we certainly hope so. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back with our final segment. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Congressman Salud Carbajal, representing the 24th Congressional District, and planning his presidential campaign.
Not quite.
See, that's what I like. I see you have the sort of the genes to be a really successful politician. And one of the things that you do, which is great, is you come back here and you have the longest trip other than someone from Hawaii, I guess. You come back here and you'll talk to anybody, not only me, but you'll talk to anyone on the street. And I guess that's really helpful. Which what the founders of our republic tried to do is to make. In fact, I think initially they wanted to have part-time legislators so that you could be in touch with what's really going on. And I think that's great that you actually spend your free time when you do come back here talking to everybody.
Absolutely, I try to. I think it's important to stay connected, to listen, and to hear directly from my constituents throughout the district, to visit as many of the communities as possible, and to hear firsthand what keeps them up at night, how they're reacting or feeling about what's happening in Washington, sharing with me what they think the priorities for the Central Coast are so that I could best represent them. And so for me, it's extremely important to stay connected. And even people who don't agree with me, it's important for me to hear from them. I had one of many town hall meetings in Santa Maria, and I recall that town hall because out of 300 people, there were maybe 20 people that didn't agree with me and made their feelings known. The rest of the audience was frustrated by some of their questions and comments and actually started booing them. And I urged the audience to let those individuals, while they disagreed with them, and I disagreed with them, to let them speak, to be civil, to remember that we are trying to emulate the behavior we want by our legislators. And we need to be courteous towards one another. And, when I went to Congress, I also signed a civility pledge. And despite my great disagreement and passionate discourse on issues when I disagree with my colleagues, my Republican colleagues, I strive to create an environment of civility where we don't lose respect for one another so much that we hate one another and there isn't this desire to want to work with one another. So it's in keeping with the AHA mission of trying to create civility, trying to create ways to work out our differences, and remembering that at the end of the day, we're all striving to be good human beings. And we have to model that if we want the other side, in this case politically, to model that back to us. So we have a huge responsibility to create the environment that we want, but it takes commitment and discipline. And I strive for that every day. I'm not perfect, but I really strive hard. And I would say more often than not, that's why I have so many relationships across the aisle in Washington.
So is there also a caucus of Democrats from California? I mean, is there a group?
Yes, there is a caucus. Every once in a great while, Republicans and Democrats will meet together. Usually Republicans meet on their own and Democrats meet on their own. But there is a caucus. I believe we're 53 members. I might be off one. And out of those 53, only seven are Republican. The rest are Democrat.
Because I would think that right now with the attacks California on the one hand is going through and with the innovations that Sacramento is promulgating, including this NCAA change in how athletes can be compensated, that we in California need to sort of become connected with each other so we can defend some of the things, and most importantly, the whole idea that we can have cars that don't pollute.
Absolutely. And I think I'm so grateful to be from a state that's so progressive on so many issues. And every once in a while, even our Republican colleagues will come along. I believe once when we had all those disasters and fires in our state, this president initially was meddling in not being supportive of California's resources. and some of my Republican colleagues.
And when they come over, and when they come over, do they say, "Hey, dude," or do they say, "Hello, Congressman"? Just joking. Salute. Thank you so much for being a fantastic congressman, and thank you for being here today. And thank you all for listening. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll see you next week.